Support for The Morning Show comes from Carthage College, home of the Aspire program, and its multifaceted approach to career preparation. The new program is designed to cultivate leadership and entrepreneurial skills while empowering each Carthage student to shape a custom career development plan from their first days on campus. Learn more about the Aspire program at carthage.edu/aspire. And we welcome you to the Thursday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. We're going to be talking about COVID today, COVID-19, and we're going to be getting some updates from right here in southeastern Wisconsin. First, from two representatives of the Central Racine County Health Department. And this is an agency that serves a number of communities. Not the city of Racine itself, but Caledonia, Dover, Mount Pleasant, North Bay, Rochester, Sturtevant, Yorkville, Waterford. I'm leaving a couple of them out, but a significant portion of Racine County. And we will take a few minutes at the outset to talk about, under more normal circumstances, the kind of work that is done by the Central Racine County Health Department. But then, of course, we will explore what it means to be a county health department during something as extraordinary as this COVID-19 pandemic. I'm really happy to have with me Margaret Gessner, who I believe has the official title of health officer for the Central Racine County Health Department, and joining us as well is Jeff Langlieb, who I believe is community health director, deputy health officer, and some other place I saw him listed as public health nurse. So I'm seeing shaking heads, so maybe not. But I saw that someplace. But at any rate, they are both deeply involved in the important work of the Central Racine County Health Department, and I'm glad that I can have them on the morning show. I appreciate them making time in very, very busy schedules. So Margaret Gessner and Jeff Langlieb, we welcome both of you to the morning show.
Thank you for having us.
Happy that you can be here. Let's begin, first of all, by talking about the essential function of the Racine County Health Department when life is more normal than it is right now. What, in a sense, is this agency charged with doing under more normal circumstances?
Thank you. Under normal circumstances, we provide 10 essential services as required by statute, and those range from monitoring the health status of our population. So we have a community health improvement plan that helps direct our work. We also have a strategic plan that directs our agency work. We investigate health problems and hazards. So we, on a normal basis, do investigate communicable diseases, also provide work around outbreak investigation, mosquito surveillance, so forth, human health hazards led investigation. We do work in education, so informing people about health issues, things such as radon prevention, safe sleep education, suicide prevention work, to name a few. We help mobilize community partnerships during our normal work. We have efforts around, for example, opioid and heroin awareness, and also other collaboratives and coalitions. Again, we develop different policies and plans to support the health of the community, and mentioned those, our community health improvement plan and our strategic plan. We enforce public health laws, and that's one of our charges, and we do that through licensing and inspection of restaurants, hotels, motels, other food establishments, and so forth. We have a DNR well testing program. We link people to services. We do that through home visiting programs that we have, through partnerships with other programs, through immunizations that we give. We assure a competent workforce. We evaluate the effectiveness of our programs, and we are involved in research with community partners at the academic level. So that would be our normal work.
Wow. I'm staggered. I did not expect it to be quite that long a list. That's impressive. And I do think it would be good to get some clarification. Is it typical for there to be, for instance, housed within a given county, something like the Central Racine County Health Department, and then what I assume is some other health department which deals with the city of Racine itself? Is that a fairly typical arrangement, as far as you know, in the state of Wisconsin, for instance, or is that a little more uncommon for there to be that separation?
The majority of health departments in the state are county health departments. There's one multiple county health department, which is Washington Ozaukee, but there are city and county health departments where within the same county, so that does happen in some areas, but the majority of them would be county only health departments.
Can I also ask what kind of relationship you have with the, for instance, the Racine City Health Department? I mean, is there some level of communication and or cooperation, or by and large, do you operate largely independently of each other?
So we have historically maintained a good and open communication with the City of Racine Health Department, and we have collaborated on different programs trying to do the best by the residents of the county. Each of us has just some different programs, and so that we each can then build on our strengths. So, for example, the City of Racine has an STD clinic. We don't. We have three home visiting programs. The city doesn't. And so we share some services across the entire county to, again, have more effectiveness and efficiencies for all of the residents.
Fantastic. Could I also ask about your own background, yours and Jeff Langlieb? I mean, at the outset of your professional career, were you involved as a healthcare worker in one capacity or another, or do you come at this more from kind of the administrative world right from the start? Margaret, let's start with you.
Sure. So I come from a nursing background, and so I worked in the hospital setting during the early part of my career. I then pretty quickly understood that I would like community-based work more, and so I went into public health as a public health nurse in Arlington, Virginia, and I did that and enjoyed it so much, decided to go back and get my master's in public health, so moved to Boston for that, and then worked for Massachusetts State Health Department, for the New York City Health Department, and Arlington, Virginia Health Department, and then Kenosha, actually, Health Department prior to coming to my current position. So I come at the job with both a health lens, but also an administrative lens, having enough jobs as an administrator in there. And also I did some health policy work when living in New York City also.
Wow. Very good. So quite a wealth of experience. Jeff Langlieb, how about you? What is, at least in brief, your professional path to your current position as Community Health Director and Deputy Health Officer for Central Racine County Health Department?
Sure. Similar to Margaret's in some respects. I come from a nursing background also. I graduated from UWM in Milwaukee in 2004. And during that time, I had a public health rotation at the Oak Creek Health Department. And I was also working at Children's Hospital as a pediatric, what they call a care partner at the time. But once I graduated, became a nurse at both places, at Oak Creek and at Children's. And then a full-time opportunity opened up in Kenosha. So I did public health nursing for Kenosha, actually at the same time Margaret was down there. We overlapped a little bit. And then I did that for a few years, and I've been at Central Racine County Health Department since 2008 and have started here as public health nurse, moved into some supervisory program management positions, and now doing what I'm doing now.
Very good.
Yep.
So once upon a time, you were public health nurse. I just saw some outdated information.
Yep. And no, that's absolutely right. So, and I just finished a master's degree from UMass a few years ago. Actually, it was longer than a few years ago, I guess.
Very good. Margaret, were you going to add something?
Just that Jeff also did his master's.
Well, good. We're glad to make the acquaintance of both of you. And again, I appreciate you joining us today on the morning show. So So Margaret Gessner, you gave us a long list of what the Central Racine County Health Department does under normal times. And of course, we are living in anything but normal times right now during COVID-19. So first of all, I think it would be interesting to know sort of from the outset of this, and Jeff, feel free to chime in as you like, towards the beginning of all of this back in March, what kind of preparations did you have to make at Central Racine County Health Department in terms of readying yourselves and readying all of us for what was coming, whatever that was going to turn out to be?
So one of the first things that we did was actually stand up our internal incident command system. And so we're all trained in incident command. And so that was important because it structured the health department in a way that we might not normally operate, but to operate in an emergency environment. And so that meant we stood up our operations and we set up logistics and also finance to address this. And so at the same time, we had to repurpose staff in order to fill the obligations and the roles under each of these areas. And so that was one of the first things that we did in order to respond. And then we eventually, when this county set up its emergency operations center, then we had a representative at the countywide level in the emergency operations center. And then we also, they set up a joint information center, and we, through our incident command, then also had a representative and continue to in their joint information center. So that was the primary thing, was to structurally make sure that we were ready. Also just to make sure that we were keeping abreast of what was going on through communication with our other local partners, with state and national partners, to make sure we had as much information at hand at the time, which has been continuously evolving every day since this started.
Right. What can you tell us about your own day-to-day responsibilities through this? What kind of things have been not only the responsibility of the health department itself, but for each of you on a day-to-day basis during COVID?
So on a day-to-day basis, so in incident command, I'm the incident commander, so it's oversight of each of the areas. And the operations section was, and the logistics were set up almost, like I said, immediately. And the operations, and Jeff can speak to this, but this is what everyone hears about. So it's disease investigation, it's contact investigation, it's monitoring, it's providing education to both individuals and to guidance, educational guidance to everything from businesses to schools to long-term care facilities. And it's also under operations is our epidemiology, so looking and tracking the data. And then under logistics, some of the primary things have been initially assuring PPE to especially our long-term care facilities, helping facilitate testing for our residents, and also coordinating with other partners. So a lot of it's around partner coordination. And then the finance piece is particularly advocated for local funding to come to local health departments to perform the work out of the national dollars that were sent to states. And so I've been part of statewide teams on a few different fronts to ensure not only coordination, but the understanding of role delineation between locals and the state.
Hmm. I suppose that's really important, so there isn't undue redundancy, and also things aren't being missed or falling between the cracks. Mm-hmm. I think both of those possibilities are very real and counterproductive.
Correct.
Yeah, if I may, on the operations section side of this, one of the biggest tasks initially was to get staff trained and adjusted to do this type of contact tracing and investigative work. We, on a normal basis, have a public health nurse and a public health educator both doing the lion's share of our communicable disease investigations in the course of a year, roughly around 1,100 investigations. We had to switch our operations here to get all of our staff or most of our staff, to be able to understand how to do that work and do it well. And so the first few weeks was training, a lot of training and a lot of practice, and then sort of adjusting that staffing with the increased cases and when cases would go down, and sort of figuring out, you know, go back to their old work kind of thing. But we've had to adjust even how we've structured our staff. So for instance, when Safer at Home was in place, you know, there wasn't many businesses open. There wasn't that many places to go. And so most of the investigative work was at the individual level. Someone gets sick, you call them, you investigate them. Their number of contacts were relatively small because people were staying at home. Once things started opening back up, we had to adjust the way we did things. We still needed investigators, but we also had to dedicate staff to just work with businesses and just work with long-term care facilities when there was an exposure there, to help those places manage those exposures and identify, you know, people who need to be quarantined or isolated and that kind of thing. So we've had to adjust that staffing model almost continuously throughout this this pandemic to adjust for these challenges as they come up.
So in other words, the work of contact tracing, which you were just describing, the nature of that very work has changed through the course of the pandemic. I mean, in a relatively brief amount of time, the changes in sort of the way we're living and interacting have changed enough that the whole way you would go about doing contact tracing would itself change.
It does. And the volume of work has changed. And so again, like early on, when you call someone who has COVID and they have two household contacts, you can get that interview done relatively quickly and talk to the contacts, and that doesn't take very long. When you, now here we are in August, and you're talking to someone and they have maybe 20 close contacts that they've had contact with through various social gatherings or whatever, and then they have a workplace where there was potentially exposures and that kind of thing, it increases the volume of notifications that have to be made. And so you have to divide up that work in a way that makes sense to be as efficient as possible.
Wow. For those of you just joining us, we're speaking with Margaret Gessner and Jeff Langlieb, who are both with the Central Racine County Health Department. Margaret Gessner is health officer. Jeff Langlieb is a community health director and deputy health officer. And we're, of course, talking about the stern challenge being posed to all of us, and especially to the health department, by this COVID-19 pandemic. So tell us, if you would, what the numbers look like right now in terms of Racine County, and maybe not just what they look like at the moment, but what the numbers have been until now. I mean, what kind of ebb and flow or mountains and valleys have we seen numerically in terms of COVID-19 cases here in Racine County?
Sure. So as of yesterday, yesterday's data run for us, which is at noon every day roughly, we had 1,521 confirmed COVID-19 cases and 185 probable cases. So 1,700.
Numbers for Monday.
Monday at noon, correct. Nice. Mm-hmm. So we have total of 1,706 cases as of noon on Monday. And what we saw early on was we saw a steady increase, relatively slow, in confirmed and probable cases. And some of that slow documenting of cases had to do with limited testing. So you can only confirm as many cases as you could test. As testing opened up in the later part of April and into May, we definitely saw a surge in cases. And that was also at the same time that the Safer at Home order was done, and things started to open up back up slowly. The pandemic for us at the health department here, and this, to be clear, this is Central Racine County Health Department's numbers. We saw a major shift in cases right after the 4th of July. So we were actually had a steady decline in cases up until that point. And roughly on July 6th and 7th, we had our largest increase in cases reported to us since the beginning of the pandemic. And it stayed that way all the way through July. So the most recent month has been very active as far as cases go. And we may have plateaued out, but it's a little too early to say whether that data is declining or whether or not we need to wait another week and see make sure that that trend continues. So we're cautious in our estimation with that.
Right. And so what you're pointing out, and I think it's been discussed before, is the fact that that surge in numbers right after the 4th of July points pretty conclusively to a behavioral link. That is, what people were doing in and around July 4th surely had something to do with that surge in numbers.
Sure. We saw, we looked at the data right after that time period and in that week or two following the 4th of July, roughly 25% of people reported to us that they attended some type of social gathering, whether that be a party with friends or a 4th of July party or an event that was a little more formal in nature. So we definitely saw that that was a change. We definitely had not seen that kind of social gathering, if you will, prior to that. But certainly since in July, there's been quite more mixing of people.
By the way, when you pose these questions to somebody who has tested positive for COVID-19 in terms of where have you been, who have you interacted with, and so on, first of all, are you do you possess, in a sense, an authority that people must answer those questions? And I mean, is it in a sense a violation of law or statute to refuse to answer those kind of questions? And do you find that that happens very often? I mean, is part of the situation that we're dealing with some people who don't want to tell you the answer to those important questions, or by and large, are people quite forthcoming with this very important information?
That's a great question. By and large, most people are very forthcoming with the information. We recently looked at some data over the last 2 weeks to see what our success rates have been with interviews. And we were able to successfully interview 91-92% of individuals who have had a COVID case, who are a case, meaning they cooperated with us for an interview. And by and large, those who do an interview with us are forthcoming and truthful. Our staff approaches this, you know, while we do have statutory authority and obligation actually to follow up on communicable diseases, we often will do this in a preamble for our interview, and then we'll tell people, look, we're calling because you tested positive for COVID-19. As you may or may not know, local health departments are required to follow up on communicable diseases, including COVID-19. And we need to conduct a structured interview with you, which is confidential. And, and this, our investigators will then lay out why the work is important, why it's important for us to be able to know who the contacts are and for them to be notified. And we found that through this relatively collaborative approach, most people respond very well to it and complete the interview with us. It's not terribly long, and it has certainly shortened up as the pandemic has gone on and as interviewing skills have improved and that kind of thing. So yeah, most people are very cooperative with us, and most of our contacts that we follow up on, about 75% of them are actually conducting an interview with us on the phone too. In other words, accepting the information that they've been exposed to a case and that there's a need for them to quarantine. Hmm.
So in terms of the numbers we're seeing right now in Racine County, again, the numbers that you are sharing with us today do not include the city of Racine, correct?
Correct. That's
so it's
correct.
All of these other towns and villages and so on. First of all, are we seeing COVID throughout Racine County? I mean, even in the smallest little villages and hamlets, I mean, in that respect, is COVID pretty much everywhere, or is it still concentrated in particular places? And are there any places in Racine County that are essentially untouched by COVID at this point?
COVID is widespread throughout the county. If you look at the map that the county has created, which is on our website and on the county's, it'll show you that, you know, the number of cases anyways will definitely follow a population density type look, you know. So where more people live, you'll have more cases. Where fewer people live, you'll have fewer cases. But there are cases throughout the county. And we also want people to understand that where someone lives may not be as important as what else is in that area. So if there's an employer in that jurisdiction that employs people from Milwaukee County, City of Racine, Kenosha County, Illinois, and those people come to the work site with COVID, there's a transient nature to the population. And I think that's something we want people to understand, that yes, there's COVID where there's COVID everywhere in Racine County, but there's COVID everywhere in Racine County that where anywhere people can gather, anywhere people can be together or do things, there's the risk of infection.
I was just going to follow up on that and just say it's, I mean, for that very reason, we make decisions based on either jurisdictional or county level data and not on individual municipality level. And that's really important because there's been this misnomer since the beginning that if there are less cases in a certain area, then the risk is less, and that actually may or may not be true. And so because like Jeff said, where we live and work and play all matter, and those generally are not always the same place. And so it's it would be too narrow of a lens to look at one small municipality and say, you know, you all are okay, you know, everyone else though has a higher risk. So we look not only at our data, but we look at Kenosha County, Walworth, Milwaukee, Waukesha. We look at Illinois, and all the it matters, and especially when there's community transmission.
Right. I think it's important to know to what extent we do know, and I think you probably do have a fair amount of information about this in terms of who is tending to come down with COVID, and can cases be traced, at least with some broad generalizations, in terms of particular behaviors. That is, are the people who are coming down with COVID by and large people who have engaged knowingly or unknowingly maybe in risky behavior, or is there not a very strong correlation in that respect? Do we see even people who are being very, very cautious nevertheless contracting COVID one way or another? I mean, does your contact information tracing give us that kind of information?
It does. It doesn't necessarily characterize the nature if it's from a risk perspective. What we do know is that most of the contacts who come down with COVID those who are at highest risk for developing symptoms of COVID-19 are household contacts, because that has nothing to do with risk or behavior. It just comes from the fact that when you live together in a house with somebody and you're continually exposed during their infectious period, you'll get sick. And we see that with many other diseases too. There are, like I mentioned, right after 4th of July, we saw about 25% of people report attending a large gathering. Whether that's a risky behavior or not, I suppose is a debatable term, but certainly it's a social gathering. It's a gathering with multiple people who are not from your household. And so there's risk there, you know, to contracting disease, the wider you expand your bubble, for lack of a better term. So we haven't, I would be cautious to generalize on quote unquote risky behavior and as a driving factor for the outbreak, but certainly the closer contact you have with people over a longer period of time definitely increases the risk of contracting COVID-19. No question.
Another statistical question I wanted to ask is, my understanding is that earlier in COVID, when we would look at all of Racine County, that the percentage of cases that were in the city of Racine itself was a very high number, and relatively few cases in the remainder of the county. My understanding is that those numbers are coming together a little bit more, that the percentage of COVID in the city versus the remainder of the county, that is not as wide a divergent as it was once. Can you confirm that? Does that happen to be correct? And if that's correct, is there any particular reason for that?
It is correct that when we looked at the case rates per 100,000 people, that toward the end of May, the city of Racine's health department jurisdiction had a much higher rate among their population than Central Racine County Health Department. There was a big divergence from that entire month of April all the way through the end of June, when the lines finally came back together, and that's when cases declined. So we saw the rate, when you looked at the rate for our health department, the rate for the city health department, and the overall rate for the county, those have not diverged significantly since that point. They've sort of risen and fall at the same time, at the same rate, and there's not this big gap anymore that we used to see. So why that happened, we're not exactly sure. It could have had a lot to do with where testing sites were set up early in May. There was a lot, the pandemic has been different every month as far as what's available to people and sort of the epidemiological factors that, you know, they've changed over the course of the pandemic. But now we're seeing a little more of a consistent rise and fall, regardless of location.
And are you at liberty to tell us about any hot spots, as they're called, that are in Racine County itself at the moment? Or is that information you prefer not to divulge?
Most of it, what we can say is that from a hotspot perspective, the pattern of disease follows population density. So again, if you looked at a heat map, you would see places that are a little brighter, but you're also going to notice that that is also places that are fairly population dense. The other situation where we've seen, if you want to call it a hotspot, are areas where there's congregate living settings. And so that can include, you know, healthcare facilities, it can include businesses. And because some of these are where people reside, we do protect the confidentiality of that, but we do work with those places to, you know, make sure that they have the tools and resources they need to manage what they need to manage.
Very good. A last question then for the two of you. What would be the most important words of advice that you would have for people who have remained safe thus far and want to remain safe through COVID-19? And maybe if you have any advice that is beyond the obvious, not that the obvious isn't important to state and restate, but beyond what we've already heard quite a lot about, do you have other advice for people to remain safe during COVID?
So I do want to remind everyone what those basic messages are, that although they go far if people actually adhere to them, but that to stay home when you're ill, to follow the isolation and quarantine recommendations of the local health department, to wear a mask, to make sure to socially distance, to use good hand hygiene, and especially when there's a lot of community transmission, to not attend large gatherings. So those are the things that we want people to remember. These are the messages that have been going out. I think the other thing to remember is that that COVID, at the end of the day, is an equal opportunity disease, and meaning that that people may be susceptible no matter where they live, no matter what the number case count is. So it what matters is the level of transmission, and we don't always know what that is because of testing capacity has been a big issue, and we also always don't know what that is because of asymptomatic individuals with a disease. And so the CDC has said up to 40% of individuals may be asymptomatic, and so I think to only look at numbers in you know particular areas does not necessarily reflect risk. And so I think when there's community transmission, everyone needs to remember that they could be susceptible because there could be people that are asymptomatic. And then of course, we also just want to last make sure that people who have underlying conditions really talk with their healthcare provider about what's best for them in terms of work and other things that they might do in their daily life to make sure that they have the least exposure possible.
Very good. Well, you've shared a great deal of really important information in this conversation, and I appreciate the time that you have taken to be with us today. Margaret Gessner, Health Officer, and Jeff Langley, a Community Health Director and Deputy Health Officer for the Central Racine County Health Department. It has been good to connect with both of you, and I thank you most profoundly for being part of the morning show today, and thank you for your ongoing good work on behalf of all of us.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And to finish up today's Music Potpourri, I am really glad that I can connect with Carla Nebukosi, who is the Deputy Director of the Walworth County Department of Health and Human Services. And we're going to be asking him a number of different questions about how Walworth County is faring in the midst of this COVID-19 situation and what he and his colleagues are busy doing in terms of trying to safeguard the well-being of the people of Walworth County. We welcome you to the morning show and thank you for making time for this.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
All right. So I imagine the last few months have been quite the whirlwind for you. Just in a nutshell, tell us the ways in which your day-to-day operations have changed dramatically due to COVID-19. I assume they have changed dramatically.
Sure. They've dramatically is the right word. We've suspended, at least in our public health department, virtually all non-essential services and diverted all of the public health resources to management of the virus. Fortunately, we have an integrated health and human services where we've been able to draw resources from other program areas and reassign people to the public health area. But it's become a full-time job for many people who weren't working in public health prior to the pandemic.
Wow. And how has your response changed through the course of this? I mean, all of this, at least on the local level, began at some point in March, and now we're in mid-August. Through the course of that, what kind of change has there been in what you have had to do or the way you've gone about doing it?
Sure. It's been the workload has steadily increased. In the earlier days of the pandemic, testing was relatively rare, and it for public health a lot of what we do is triggered by positive test results. So if there aren't a lot of laboratory confirmed cases, there isn't a lot of outreach we're doing. We're not talking to people about quarantines or isolation a whole lot. But as the National Guard has become involved, which we've used extensively in Walworth County for public testing sites, we get more and more test results. So it's good in that we understand the scope a little better, the scope of the virus, how it's really permeated our community. And at the same time, it creates a lot of work. When we're talking about thousands of case results, I think we're nearing 1,500 positive cases. Each one of those cases requires a disease investigation and a contact investigation where we're talking with people trying to identify how they contracted the disease and then reaching out to everyone that may have been a close contact to them too. So that's really become the primary focus. And as test results have steadily increased, our positive cases have steadily increased, so have our negative case results. But like I said, I think we're up to 1,500, which is, compared to some of our similarly sized counties, I think it's a high number, a relatively high number.
Right. Where are COVID tests currently being done within Walworth County?
We've had a series of public testing events. Our next one starts tomorrow. Actually, we have a 2-day event in Delavan at the Phoenix Middle School. I believe it runs 10 to 6. There's no appointment necessary. People can show up asymptomatic, and that's what we've done with our public testing events. We've held one about every 2 weeks. We've had them in Lake Geneva, Walworth, Elkhorn, and Whitewater, and we get between 1,000 and 1,200 people showing up to test.
Wow.
Beyond that, we don't have plans yet for another public testing event. I think we're looking at having one shortly after schools reconvene. There are still other testing options. Aurora is offering some testing, although that's becoming more and more limited as test supplies have been kind of redirected around the country to places identified as hotspots. So we're fortunate that the National Guard has enough supplies that we've been able to test pretty much anybody that wants to come through and get tested.
And just to be clear, we're airing this interview on Thursday morning, and so the public testing event that you talked about is Thursday and Friday?
Yes. It Thursday begins Thursday morning at 10 a.m.
Very good. So where are we at the moment seeing COVID-19 in terms of Walworth County? Are there places in Walworth County smaller communities that are all but untouched at this point, or in a sense, is COVID just about everywhere, through the whole scope of the county?
Yes, COVID is everywhere in the county. It would be easy to look to Lake Geneva and say that's where we have it because of the tourism, but that's not, that doesn't tell the full story. We've had community transmission in Walworth County since very early in the pandemic. I think we were actually identified as the third county in the state with community transmission after, I believe, Milwaukee and Dane. I'm not sure why or how that had happened, but it did.
And can you just clarify that, the terminology, for anybody who doesn't understand sort of the threshold that must be met and what it means to be categorized that way?
Sure. Community transmission just refers to really the origin of the disease in a person. We try to identify where they contract the disease. And community transmission happens when we're not able to. They essentially have caught it in the wild, not from a close contact, not from a family member, not from someone that they've been in close contact with, but we're not able to identify where they got it. That's when that's occurring, then your community has community transmission. So we have it. It's all throughout Walworth County. What's good though about this, while I can point to our numbers increasing, what's good is that we have adequate hospital capacity. We have throughout the crisis anywhere between 2 and 6 people in the hospital for COVID related symptoms. Really hasn't gone above or below that. So while our numbers have increased, our two health systems have the capacity to handle the cases that are coming their way.
I guess that's what we call flattening the curve, that the curve was flattened to such an extent that the healthcare system, at least in Walworth County, was not overwhelmed by skyrocketing numbers right off the bat. That
Correct.
Would have been a catastrophe.
Correct.
So tell us, if you would, a bit more about those points that are particularly difficult in Walworth County, that is, where you are seeing a real preponderance of COVID cases. You yourself mentioned Lake Geneva at one point. Is Lake Geneva continuing to be an issue?
Not as much as I think people think. And there's maybe several explanations for that. One being, if there is a lot of transmission happening in Lake Geneva as a result of tourism, those people are returning to Illinois. We get data on positive test results for people that live in Walworth County. That's kind of our charge. They may be returning and being tested in Illinois, and we're not able to track it. I think when we kind of look back at what went well and what didn't during this, I think we're going to identify communication between states as an area that we really could improve. It's difficult for us to really gauge the extent of transmission in Lake Geneva with how heavy the tourism is. We've seen a lot of businesses in that area respond pretty responsibly, though. We've seen some voluntary shutdowns when staff have tested positive. I think that's what we've been able to detect is in restaurants, bars, staff-to-staff transmission we've identified. We haven't seen or been able to trace a lot of staff-to-customer transmission, which I think is a good thing, although I think some of that data deficit with what's happening in Illinois may not be giving us the full picture.
Right. So when you look at the COVID cases, are you getting any sort of a sense of what is driving the numbers in terms of whether or not it is the behavior of people, the extent to which they are taking this seriously? I mean, is it even possible to make those kind of generalizations about who is coming down with COVID? I mean, I think some people want to make the assumption that this is a lot of people who are not being careful, who are thus contracting the virus. And I suspect that the picture is maybe a little more complicated than that.
You're not entirely off the mark, though. I think the numbers have increased as we've opened society up and we've opened testing up. So one, we have all sorts of testing available. Anybody that wants a test in Walworth County has largely been able to get one. And two, people are out and they're engaging in close contact. And so we're seeing increases in cases like many other places in the younger populations. At the same time, these are the people that generally are at lower risk of serious complications. So we're seeing the increases in cases because people are out and they are engaging in close contact. And at the same time, we're fortunate in that scenario is not overburdening our healthcare system. So I think it is an issue of people not necessarily always practicing physical distancing. And you can also look back to Safer at Home and see, yes, we did really well when people were adhering to Safer at Home very strictly. we're also seeing some pretty serious consequences of that too, in terms of mental health issues, substance abuse, economic crisis, you know, kids with growing academic deficits. So it really is a balancing act. And for us, we continue to point people to the hospital data and the death data, that if we have the hospital capacity to manage the pandemic at its level in Walworth County, we're okay. We want to keep this transmission slow and controlled, and keep our hospital capacity healthy.
When I spoke to representatives of the Greater Racine County Health Department, they pointed to a rather sharp spike in cases right after the 4th of July. Mm-hmm. I wonder if you saw a similar spike in Walworth County.
Yeah, we did. We've seen our cases really steadily increase throughout the summer.
So, for the typical citizen, is there anything beyond the obvious that you can advise them to do or think about in terms of trying to remain safe from the virus and to help slow the spread of this? Or does it simply come down to those basics that we've heard time and time again?
We've learned more about the virus, and those old talking points for March are still the same. Those are still the things that work. That 6 feet is really, really important. Taking extra steps to protect those that are vulnerable. So those that are older, 60 and older, washing your hands, wearing your mask, maintaining physical distancing are still the best measures of protecting yourself. And I will say, while we do have community transmission, the vast majority of the transmission that we're identifying is happening with close contacts. We're able to identify where people are getting it, and it's most often happening with a household member.
And for the most part, are people being responsive to your investigative questions when it comes time to ask them, you know, where have you been? What have you been doing? How might you have contracted this virus? I mean, we hear something about how not everybody welcomes those kind of questions and regards them as intrusive. And of course, others welcome them because it's for the public good. By and large, do you feel like the citizens of Walworth County are responding well to the work that you're trying to do to trace this?
Yeah, well, that's a two-part answer. I will say the first is yes. The people who we connect with who have a laboratory confirmed positive and we need to conduct the disease investigation have been very receptive, very responsive, and very willing to isolate or quarantine when needed. It's when we get into the contact investigation where we're reaching out to people that have been identified as close contacts. I think there's some fatigue setting in, and people maybe in the earlier stages of the pandemic were more interested in participating in that process. We're seeing more reluctance. We're getting fewer return phone calls.
So the work goes on. Are you guardedly optimistic that the situation as it remains will remain steady and manageable?
I am optimistic. I think we're going to find our way out of this. There are, you know, the events that are on the horizon that I think we need to weather. I mean, we've got the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater bringing many students back on campus. They've got a testing plan they're working on, which is great. And two, a lot of Walworth County schools are planning on reconvening here shortly after the holiday weekend. I'm making the assumption that we will see some transmission related to both of those events.
Carlo Nebocosi is with the Walworth County Department of Health and Human Services. I appreciate your time, sir. Thank you so much, and thank you for the good work that you're doing on this.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Tomorrow on The Morning Show, you'll hear my interview with the author of Mutt's Dream, Making the Mick. It's an examination of the early life of baseball superstar Mickey Mantle and the crucial role that his father played in shaping young Mickey Mantle into the baseball phenomenon that he was to become. So that's tomorrow on The Morning Show. The Morning Show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock, and it's available 7 days a week as a podcast. Search for The Morning Show with Greg Berg. It's exactly 9 o'clock. Support for The Morning Show comes from Carthage College, home of the Aspire program and its multifaceted